it literally pokes into that survival instinct that you need to learn about, and you need to learn about yourself, how you're actually going to trade with actual skin in the game. And for some reason, when you sign up for a challenge, people start getting those emotions and they start messing things up because you have the, you know, some of them give you the daily loss limit. There's a trailing drawdown. There's like a whole bunch of stuff that they've never thought about when they started to trade on their own account, right? So knowing how you're going to behave in the high pressure environment and how much you can actually mess it up, that's invaluable.
Yeah.
To do it for a fraction of the cost rather than 10, 20, 50K of your own money.
Right.
So that's definitely a pro.
Everybody, welcome to a new episode. Before we get started, make sure you show a little love. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel and hit the thumbs up button. If you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave us a review. Any other platform that you're on, whatever the love looks like, show a little, and then let's get started.
Market Stalker.
Yes. Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for asking. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part, joining me on a Saturday.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Where are you calling from?
London, UK.
Ah, how's your boy Boris? How you feel about that?
Yeah, you know what? It was a long time coming.
Really?
He messed it up, man. Totally messed it up. Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was the right decision. It should happen sooner though.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, happy days then.
Boris. Yeah, exactly.
Good. I thought this was something bad news, but I guess we'll start off with a happy celebratory goodbye to Boris Johnson.
Yeah, exactly. Better days, hopefully. Better days. We've had Brexit. We've had COVID. Hopefully, UK is looking up. I don't know. We'll see.
You guys are due for a win for sure. And
yeah.
Hopefully us in the States here too. So
yeah.
Very, very cool. Now we are joined on Saturday. Before we jump into it, what's going on Saturday for you? What's a normal Saturday look like for the Market Stalker?
Usually as much rest as possible. I usually spend the day either walking my dogs. I have 8 dogs.
I'm sorry. I think I broke up. It sounded like you said you had 8 dogs. How many dogs do you have?
Yeah, 8.
8 dogs. What's the smallest dog you have?
Well, the thing is, I have all of them are kind of like small to medium size.
Okay.
So we have a King Charles Cavalier.
Okay.
And we have a Pomeranian.
Okay.
So he was kind of a new addition because we actually lost our older Cavalier Pomeranian mix 2 years ago. Yeah, and we were all very heartbroken. So we got her to mend all of our hearts. Now, the Cavalier and her got on like a house on fire, and they had 6 puppies.
Wow!
So we
good
kept
on
them all. Yeah,
you should have gotten them a Netflix subscription to.
Oh yeah,
distract.
Yeah, definitely.
So
yeah,
breeding.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, but we love them, and I would never give them up. So yeah.
Okay, so normal weekend, you rest a lot. You probably spend about 12 hours walking your dogs to get them all out. What else do you got going on?
Yeah, well, I'm actually a gamer. So, I mean, some people feel like, oh, you're too old to play video games. But I actually find that it keeps my mind busy enough to not think about the markets and work and everything. Because I'm one of those people who works quite a lot. I love it. I absolutely love what I do. Uh-huh. So I found that the older I got, because I look like a kid, but I'm actually in my 40s. So the older I got, it started to affect my energy levels. So I would have no weekend breaks ever. And then I would get to Wednesday and I would be absolutely shattered. So about 5 years ago, I started to manage my time a little bit better. And I basically try to do as little as possible on Saturday and Sunday when it comes to like any kind of active work. But it's still, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, because I would get to Sunday and I would get bored. So I would still work. So, yeah, but this is a typical Saturday for me where I already had 2 dog walks. I went to the gym. We're doing some property development here as well. So I also went to the recycling center to drop off some things. So it's not as relaxing as I would like it to be. But yeah, it's all good.
Okay, a couple things to unpack there for sure. Mm-hmm. Starting off with gamer. What kind of games are you playing right now?
I'm quite into kind of adventure role-playing games. So, you know, anything on PS5. So right now I'm just finishing Ghostwire Tokyo because I get quite busy as well. I can't play video games every single Saturday, obviously. But so I played Horizon Zero Dawn and then I did.
Did you do Elden Ring?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I found it a little bit inflexible, though. What did you
really
think? Yeah,
I would give it I don't play a lot of games.
Okay.
The only kind of games I really like are games where you have a character and you level it up and you build it up. And
that's what I like as well. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
I feel like it's a nice kind of the thing I try to do in life, but in a game type of format. So when games like that come around every once in a while, and I used to play a lot when I was younger.
Mm.
And Elden Ring to me was just awesome. It was really great. I could have gotten very, very lost in that world. I deleted it off my computer just so I don't play it anymore. But it's amazing.
See, funnily enough, when I first went into prop trading, I kind of come from a background of swing trader who went into intraday trading. So when I first started working in the office, which was back in 2013, I needed something to keep me busy whilst I was waiting for my setups, because I typically only do like a couple of trades per day. These days, I probably do about 4 to 5, but it's like trying to catch the bigger swings in the day. So I had a lot of time on my hands where I was just doing absolutely nothing. And I asked my boss whether I can actually install the World of Warcraft. And he said, yeah, why not? Well, so I would have like one screen when I would be playing World of Warcraft, and I would have like all my charts like on the other screens, and it worked perfectly. It was like amazing.
Wow,
so I don't do that anymore because I've got multiple businesses now myself. So I'm you know, pretty busy. But yeah, it was a very, very good way to keep my paws off the trigger when the setup is not there.
Good on you. Good on you. Okay. Second thing to unpack about what you said earlier, you said, in your 40s, you got to tell me, how do you keep the face looking so young? Collagen? What's your secret?
Okay, I'll be completely upfront with you. Okay,
please.
I do Botox. Okay,
uh-huh.
Obviously, but I mean, all of my family looks pretty young.
Sure.
I like how you're writing that down. It's like my Botox.
Uh-huh.
I exercise a lot. I try to eat right. I don't really drink much at all.
Mm.
So I think it's the combination of good lifestyle practices and genetics. My mom is like 74. She looks like she's about late 50s. And that's just like natural. She doesn't really take care of herself all that much. And I have an older sister. She's 52. She looks like she's like mid-30s. So we're all obviously very...
Bounce it right up.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that can only take you so far. You still have to make sure that, you know, I have an excellent skincare regime as well. Like I would never go to bed with makeup. I always wear sunscreen, you know, little things like that. So it definitely helps.
Very good. Very good. Thank you for the tips. I feel like I'm on the brink of aging not well. So
you definitely have to start taking control of that. Yeah. You don't want leathery skin, man. That's not the way to go.
No, it just isn't. It isn't. Okay. So kind of jumping into things a little bit, because I'm very interested in just having a conversation and your journey. I actually don't know really anything about you.
Okay.
And it's I think you have an interesting story from what I do know about you. So if you could kind of just start us off with walking us through your story, and then I'll unpack it as we go.
Yeah. So I was a session musician for a long time. I was an alto saxophonist and electric guitarist since I was like 14 professionally. So I did that for like 20 years. And actually went for the first 5-6 years of trading, when I was still an independent trader, just trading for myself, I did it parallel to music.
Wow.
So it took a while before I actually fully transitioned into trading. And the thing with musicians, you know, I always had a passing interest in the markets, but it was never something that I thought I could do at that point, because obviously musicians are traditionally not known as like being great at maths, which is what I thought trading was about. And that's why they're musicians, right?
Sure.
Then I moved to Canary Wharf, which is like an equivalent of Wall Street, only in London. There's a lot of banks there. I had some residencies, like gigs and stuff, so it was very easy for me to get to there. So I started hanging out with a whole bunch of traders and bankers and stuff. So naturally, we were talking about just their jobs, my job. And around about that time, this was 2007, 2008. So I remember I started really looking into trading seriously after the credit crunch. So we were just kind of, you know, drinking, whatever, night, evening, or night off and whatever. And one of them asked me, hey, you seem to have like this like natural intelligence. Have you ever tried trading? And I had tried trading a year before that. It didn't go well because I didn't know anything about it, right? Because I was like completely green. I didn't come from any finance background or anything like that. I was just like a musician. I do have a master's degree in music performance. So I am educated. I am very academic. It's just that I'm not, like math was something that never really interested me. But luckily for me, it wasn't really what makes a good trader. I mean, there's obviously components to it when it comes to risk models and stuff. One thing about me is that I was a coder. So I do, weirdly enough, I have this like analytical brain that is also quite creative. So that's where my strengths lie. And when I was talking to my friend, I said this misconception to him. I said, well, isn't it all about maths? And he goes, no, not at all, man. Like, yeah, there's some, but mainly it's like patterns and I can show you what it's all about. So he broke out candlestick charts and immediately to me, they reminded me of music note sheet. So I was like, okay, I like that. And I just got hooked right away. I needed to know everything about this thing. I got really obsessed. And he started talking to me about order blocks and how they find levels. Obviously, they have an order book, which is, you know, it's a quite a bit different way of trading than what we do now. But it was very helpful because they kind of still look at levels where previous inventory was. So on very large time frames, you can kind of see where the large moves happened. And they had this whole analysis around it. So he taught me how to do that. And that was my very first entry into proper institutional order flow trading. So I became a swing trader and I only traded euro dollar at first. So I was a forex trader for a long time, like five, sure, six, 7 years. And I did really well. I did. I made my first kind of six-figure account just trading euro dollar, nothing else, in a couple of years. So you know that was pretty good. But 2012 came, and all this nonsense with the European austerity measures started happening. The interest rates were getting lowered left, right, and center. And suddenly we had this very new sort of world order where we had very, very low interest rates and forex markets stopped moving because they were trying to stabilize the currencies, right?
Sure.
So forex dried up. So I found myself kicking off my swing position and sitting in a trade for like 3 weeks and it going absolutely nowhere. It got very frustrating, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to just give up. I'm not somebody who gives up. And I thought to myself, all right, I need to change the market and I need to go intraday. So I tried that by myself for a year, got absolutely nowhere. And then I decided to sign up for an apprenticeship at a prop firm all the way to Chicago, because I knew that that was where the prop trading was happening. So I'm like, I'm going to go there. So I went and started learning all about the profile. I've never heard about market profile before.
You physically went to Chicago?
Yeah. Only for a few months, because then winter set in and oh my God.
Brutal up there.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I come from Belgrade and it doesn't get that cold there because it's actually Mediterranean climate there. But we get a little bit nippy during the winter. But Chicago winters, that's just on another level, man.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Not good. I came back to London after that. But that's where I kind of learned the how to trade with profile. Now, because I already used order blocks and I also used statistical averages, I kind of started to blend all of the profile ideas that they gave me with what I was already doing. So sure. That's why eventually I kind of came up with my own methodology. I'm also an educator. I don't know how much you said you don't know that much about me. So we actually run courses that teach people how to trade. And it's effectively a blend of order blocks, aka supply and demand, various uses of statistical averages, and market profile, heavy use of TPR profile, open sentiment, all that good stuff. So yeah, and all of that wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't actually physically gone and learned it from people who have been doing that for like 30 years or something. So yeah, that was a pretty cool experience.
Very interesting. It's very cool. When I started off in trading, I really just went by myself a long time. And I can really appreciate how bad of a path that was and how much more just difficult I've made it for myself. And it's very cool that when you realize this is something you wanted to do, you really took some pretty drastic steps to make it happen. So good on you.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like that. You know, people who know me, they say, oh my God, you never do anything halfway. When I moved to London, I moved by myself. And it was just like a decision that I had to make because where I come from and when I was growing up there, we actually still had some problems with like civil wars and NATO bombing us and stuff. So literally every like 2-3 years, you wouldn't even know whether you're going to live the next day. And after 10 years of that and my teenage years just being absolute hell, I was like, I've had enough of that. I just want a normal life. So I literally just made a decision that I'm going to move to London and I did it. So I'm a little bit impulsive, but it's never without a plan. It's always for a greater purpose or to learn more stuff and just to better my life experience.
Good on you. Before we go any further, very interested. It took me a while to get the figure out what it says. The sign behind you, time of day is a level.
Time of day is a level. Yes, yes, yes. This is something that I always say.
What does that mean?
Yes. Okay, so time of day is a level. So one of the concepts that I teach, it's very high tech, by the way. So basically, there are these events that happen intraday that affect how the price behaves. And it's not something that, you know, I invented. It's something that I've observed and quantified and managed to make quite a lot of money for myself from that. It's basically to do with the types of markets that I trade. They're usually connected to Forex currencies. So for example, I trade crude oil and gold. Those are my two core markets. And because crude oil is, for example, connected to the Canadian dollar, because Canada is one of the largest exporters of crude oil out there, there's this thing called the Forex option expiry that happens at 10 a.m. Eastern every day. And the larger the option, the more knock-on effect it has in crude oil. As a result, around 10 a.m. Eastern, you get this reversal in prices that is a very high probability event. So if you know what to look out for, that is actually a very, very powerful technique to have. It gives you an assumption of a direction before it even happens. But obviously, you have to have some kind of a level, ideally. It obviously has higher probabilities when you do have a level. That's why time of day is a level. So if you're looking for an intraday reversal, I have these set times of day where I teach people not to trade before that time of day happens. You have something similar in equities as well. So towards the end of the day, you have bond markets that shut. And then for the last hour of trading, the bond traders get a little bit bored and they're like, well, what are we going to do now? So they all flood the equities market. That's like the throwback from the open outcry, which carried into electronic trading. So you get an influx of volume. So when people trade equities, because I was on an equities desk at one point as well, so I traded ES and NQ, and I still do. It's just they're not like my absolute favorites. I much prefer hard commodities. And so they go, oh my God, what happened? And I'm like, nothing happened. It's just the last hour of trading. And the same thing happens 10 minutes before the market close because you have the portfolio rebalancing. Everybody starts to close positions. I'm not sure why nobody talks about these things or why people have not quantified that, but that is the kind of stuff that I teach my people, right? And that's the kind of stuff that earned me the nickname. Well, the first nickname in the prop world was Wicked Witch, because I would basically identify these levels and the time of day when they would happen. So somebody would be going, oh, hey, I want to go short ES here. And I just go, oh, just be careful, because, you know, we do have the last hour of trading, and you also have a statistical average there. So, yeah, it might react. So the whole market would start turning around, and then I would get the look. It's like, how did you, like, what happened? And that earned me the nickname Wicked Witch. And then later on, a much nicer one, Mystic D, which is something that I quite liked. And that is nicer. But yeah, so it was just like kind of a natural progression for me to kind of start saying to people, oh, time of day is a level, time of day is a level. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it is a level. Yes, it is. It's like, if you're looking at a level, just make sure that you're trading at the right time of day.
So, okay. I love what you just said here, because about, let me say this, what you've said about making observations and then putting that together to even come up with a trade idea afterwards. Yeah. I feel like one of the biggest issues that people have in trading is they just don't understand what we're actually doing here. And all their time and energy and attention is just put on kind of something outside of their awareness that they just want to tell them what to do. But the idea of, and this is what I love about the volume profile and profiling, is looking at the market in a way of pattern recognition. And seeing these repeatable structures and patterns that happen 100%. Time and time again.
Yeah.
But then being able to take that a step further and actually make a trade idea out of it so you can have an edge. So I love that you said that, because I think it's massively important. Could you talk to me about this? When you make an observation in the market, what does that look like? Like, how do you track these things? What's kind of like from the first idea that you kind of have to taking it a step further? Do you have like a step process for that, or what is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I've been doing from the start. That's probably the reason why I was able to turn things around and to actually make this into a career so quickly. I always use any kind of a journaling software, anything that I can look at statistics and data. So data analytics is something that I advise everyone to do. But obviously, when you're first starting out, you just need to observe what's happened and what time of day it was, how did it happen. And then for me, initially, it was like almost like a diary kind of thing. Oh, 6:30, crude oil turned around. There was a bearish engulfing pattern around the value area high, or, you know, something along those lines. And that would kind of be my benchmark for a price behavior to look out for it as I kind of do the walk forward test to see whether that's going to keep happening and how often it keeps happening. This is the long-winded, winded process of actually getting to data, which is why it's good that, you know, people like you and me, we've got these courses that actually tell people already all the stuff that we found out and that we came by with great difficulty, all just laid out. So that would be the first step. And then once I have that observation, I would start to try and make trades based on that observation, and I would track them. What was the size of the stop loss? If my stop loss got hit, would a larger stop loss have worked? And what size of the stop loss was needed in order for the trade to survive? Or was it just completely wrong? Because that also happens, right? And all of that, I used to use Trader View. So not Trading View, but an older, you know what it is. And then after that, I started using EdgeWonk probably in the last kind of 3 years. But I'll be honest, you know, I've been doing this for 14 years now. I don't really look at data analytics anymore, because I know myself and my trading pretty well. And there's nothing really that surprises me in the markets, because I have these systematic processes in place. And I never really do a trade without understanding why things are happening. I think that's also a big, big problem when people are starting, that they don't really have a lot of confidence. A, they don't know what they're doing exactly. And B, they don't have a lot of confidence in the setup, because they don't understand the context. I get quite a number of traders coming to me going, hey, I just want a simple method. Trading is not simple. Trading is complex. It's not rocket science, but it is complex. There's a lot of components to it that you need to get right in order to have like a systematic, properly viable system, right?
Sure.
So yeah, so using data analytics is definitely what I would say is
yeah,
my process.
I have a very, I would say, similar process to me. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the things that I really had to grow into, because I was very, coming into trading, I was very sporadic. I was extremely just like high strung. And the idea of logging something and then going back and reflecting on that was just not in my wheelhouse at all. And
what was your background? Because I've watched your videos, but you don't really, I didn't see you talk about your background a lot. Maybe I should interview you.
yeah. We'll save that for when I have, when I'm on Market Stalker. I don't want to bore my audience. But yeah. I didn't have a background in trading at all before I got into it. But I've been doing it since late 2013, 2014.
Okay.
When I got started. But what I've developed and kind of what works a lot for me is just having a way in real time to mark off an observation that I have, because it's unbelievable how good our brains are at thinking thoughts and making observations, but how garbage we are at remembering things.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, you have these amazing observations that could make you good money that if you don't actually mark them down because you just think you're going to remember them, it's just lost. Kind of similar if you're like listening to a podcast, you're like, oh, that's a really good thought. I'll just remember it. No, you won't. It's gone.
Absolutely. See, I'm also glad that you said that, because whenever I'm working with a new trader, the first thing that I make them do is to come up with a weekly trading plan and then with a daily trading plan. Now, with the way my method is, we start with order blocks on large timeframes, but then day by day, we create different strategies, and I want them to create 3 to 4 hypotheses of what should happen in that particular narrative on the day. Because you have the open sentiment that can give you pretty good direction on the day, right? And based on that, you can come up with the levels and ideas of what you're thinking of the mod, like which lever is going to actually be reactive. So is it going to be like if we have an outside up day? If the market migrates back to the value edge, well, that's a high probability trade that it is very likely that the market is going to turn around there because it's come back to the mean. So, you know, that's something that I make them put into their trades. But we also go deep into failed auctions, sustained auctions, so just quantifying those trades the way they should be quantified and having a clear-cut target, knowing where to put your stop loss, knowing where the target is, not really deviating from that until we have some core skills set in place. So until you have that, there's no point talking about psychology. There's no point talking about all of that nonsense because it's not going to matter, because you don't have knowledge enough to basically take advantage of what you're seeing. But once you have an idea of what represents a good trading location, that's when we can start talking about psychology.
Yeah, for sure. When what do you say to people that say your green screen is the worst thing they've ever seen in their lives?
I really don't care. So
why do you use the green screen?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm actually in process of changing that because previously I actually had to use the green screen because the room, I don't know. Have you ever been to London?
No.
So London is basically a collection of villages with very small houses. And the prices of the house that I live in is about £1 million, right? That's what I pay for it. It's tiny. Tiny. And you can't do it. Like, if you want to change your mind, you have to go to the next room. That's how small it is, right? It's like absolutely ridiculous. It's so unfortunately, because of the constraint of space and all of the stuff that I have, it just didn't look right. You know, this is like as good as it looks, but we've actually made a dedicated room now because obviously I'm taking YouTube a lot more seriously these days. But back in whenever I started, like my first video ever was like 2015, but I started properly doing YouTube videos in 2020, actually. So there was no other way. Like I couldn't sit in a terrible tiny room where, you know, there's crap everywhere. Call around me, like there's like it's tiny, it's clutter everywhere. So it was just a better choice to have a green screen. But like I said, I am kind of in the process of creating a set and actually kind of changing that. So it very, very soon, I'm not going to be using a green screen anymore. So I think a lot of people will be happy about that. But I don't really care, because it's like, if you come to my channel and the thing that you're looking at is a bad green screen, yeah, mate, why don't you listen to what I'm actually saying and you might learn something over like criticizing my production skills. It's like, just be happy that I've done a video this week with all the stuff I've got going on. So that was kind of my response to them. I'm a little bit snarky sometimes with them, because I'm like, just listen to what I'm saying. Like, close your eyes, just listen to me. Don't look at the green screen, right? Doesn't matter.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you what, good, a really good life lesson there on the importance of speed. And maybe now you're setting up your studio a little bit better. And if you were starting from zero subscribers, because now you think you're ready for it, now you're starting with almost 6,000 subscribers, and it's like a different world. And for speed is just such an important thing, even if it's the time's never going to be exactly right. Just
have to do it. Yeah, you just have to do it.
Just move to Chicago. Just do it.
Exactly. Don't have to tell you. Move to London. Just go.
Very cool. Okay, you trade crude oil and gold primarily. What do you do for the sessions on these? Do you do, like, when you're doing your analysis, 24-hour sessions, or do you block them off by
overnight? I block them off. So basically I don't think that anyone should be using 24-hour profiles rather than just to look at an overall market and moves and what's happened. Because you're not going to have a value area edge from a 24-hour profile reactive. Why? Because you have different players. So I focus my main decisions for the NYMEX and COMEX session either on the entire electronic trading session. So that's like in my time zone. Well, actually, let's use Eastern, because that's, you know, it's probably better. So 9 a.m. For crude oil until 4 p.m. So that would be the close for the profile. But if you want to be even more purist than that, you could take open outcry hours. And that means a close of 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Mm-hmm. So, you know, however you approach it, those are the hours that the market participants were most active. That's what you want to look at. Why would you look at overnight market in Asia if the crude oil does absolutely nothing for most of the time? It's completely pointless to me. And actually, one of the big critiques of market profile was that, it doesn't work. That was something that worked in the 80s. I'm like, well, yeah, okay, who told you that? And then we get into the discussion. And very quickly, it becomes apparent that the person in question is using a 24-hour profile, because it makes sense, doesn't it? You take a whole day. Oh, yeah, let's just take the open, and that'll be our kind of reference. Absolutely not. So I definitely partial everything to different sessions. If I'm going to trade inactive hours, because sometimes I do trade London, I will use just the London hours, but I cut it off at the start of NYMEX, because different players will a lot more volume come in. And whatever London has done up to that point, it doesn't matter. So my
when you say cut it off, you mean you'll end the trade?
Yeah, I'll end it. No, I'll end the profile. So if we're talking about profile calculations, I only trade for probably about a couple of hours for London, because that's when the moves kind of happen. After that, it becomes a little bit boring. So, and in the morning, you have the initial balance, which is quite frequently the most random part of the day anyways. I rarely do trades during the initial balance, whichever session we're talking. But usually if I trade London, I will trade between, let's talk about TPO period. So about C to E TPO. So literally like about 2 hours into it, I will then try and open a trade or find a setup.
What do you do for the hour for crude or for gold? What's your beginning and end of session for that?
Yeah. So for that, I actually use Globex exchange open. So I use basically, let me convert that into Eastern, 8:30 a.m. And then I actually shut it off at 4 p.m. So that's the whole electronic. Yeah, but I do switch, like I say that, but you know, I will switch through the day just to see whether there's markedly different areas that I might look at just with the open outcry hours. For the most part, my profile will be based on the entire electronic session.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. Now, do you trade strictly your own capital, funded capital? What's your setup now?
It's a mix of both. I'm actually funded by a whole bunch of these prop trading firms now. It started off because my traders, the people who are on the program, they're like, hey, have you heard about this prop trading company? I'm like, no, I haven't. Let's try it out. And then I kind of kept passing the challenges because I'm, you know, obviously I know how to trade. So right now I've got about six of them. One of them is not really anything online. It's actually one of the old prop firms that I used to work with. They had some regulatory problems at one point, but they kind of came back and they asked me to come back and trade for them. I do have my own account as well. I do trade that pretty actively. But yeah, for the most part right now, I'm just trying to show people the ropes of how to actually pass some of these online prop trading challenges. Because when I started, it was an entirely different story.
Yeah.
The entry into prop was very expensive. And then you had something called the Bloomberg Terminal. I don't know whether you've gone through that as well, which basically cost you about, at that time, it was $3,000 a month, which you have to recoup from your profits. Even if you've lost money, that still stays as kind of like a debt, and that gets carried over into the next month. So even if you make money the next month, they just take the money for it. It's like,
that's a very interesting.
Yeah. So when people are like saying to me, oh my God, but this is expensive, I'm just like, you have no idea what you're saying, mate. So yeah, for me, I think it's been quite a revelation. First of all, you don't have to leave the house. You don't have to be in the office in like some ungodly hour that all prop trading firms used to make you do. Even in London, you know, I trade the NYMEX market. Over here, that means the market doesn't even open until 2 p.m.
Right.
They make me go into the office at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. So you'll be there and you're like, this is just a waste of time, man.
You'll be playing your video games waiting
yeah,
for
Yeah, playing us. World of Warcraft. Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, cool. Now, as far as the online prop funding goes, it's obviously making a big, or it's made a big.
It has, yeah.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. What do you think is the overall net positive or net negative?
Yeah, so the net positive is definitely that whoever's going into trading, typically how the story goes is that they want to trade. They plow in 10K of their own cash, which for a lot of people is a lot of money, right?
Sure.
There's not that many people out there that are like, yeah, I just lose 10K, no problem. And then every single time that they do that, they're unprepared for the whole, you know, mental adjustment. Psychology hits them right across the face. So even if they've done so well on the demo, they lose the 10K. That's it. And then the psychological traumas are created, and that becomes much more difficult to deal with later on. Whereas with these prop challenges, you pay like a fraction of a cost to get some access to the biggest pro, I think, is the fact that when you're at a prop challenge, when you're doing an online prop challenge, it literally pokes into that survival instinct that you need to learn about, and you need to learn about yourself, how you're actually going to trade with actual skin in the game. And for some reason, when you sign up for a challenge, people start getting those emotions and they start messing things up because you have some of them give you the daily loss limit. There's a trailing drawdown. There's like a whole bunch of stuff that they've never thought about when they started to trade on their own account, right? So knowing how you're going to behave in the high pressure environment and how much you can actually mess it up, that's invaluable.
Yeah.
To do it for a fraction of the cost rather than 10, 20, 50K of your own money.
Right.
So that's definitely a pro. The problem that I can possibly see with all of these companies in the future is that if they come under some kind of regulation, things will change and they could disappear. I hope not, because, you know, in some form, those kind of prop trading firms, prop trading prop shops have been around for a long, long time. So I don't think it's necessarily going to happen like 100%, but there is a little bit of a you know, weirdness that they're not really funding people for real, or even if they do fund them, they're like, oh, it's still a sim, but blah. So some regulators might have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it because I've traded the live markets. I've gotten hit with ridiculous fills that had nothing to do with the fill that I wanted. So actually trading on a sim, it's, for me, it's better because, you know, when you get to a certain size, it doesn't matter if you're trading like one or two contracts, it's not going to affect you. But you get to 30, 40, 100, 150 contracts, it's going to start affecting you. And there's no problems with executions in sim, right?
Yeah. Well, did you, were you affected by Rhythmic going down on Friday?
Yeah, I actually did have a couple of positions in Apex. And luckily it's fine because I always have like a stop and stuff. So the trade got stopped out because I couldn't close it. But I didn't get massively affected by it. So did you?
Very interesting. So I've just gone down the route. Apex was my first kind of forte into it, because I have this idea after working with enough traders of just realizing in my own journey into this, massively undercapitalized always. And if I could have, or if I would have taken a step back and gone like a funded route to kind of more hone my skills, because to your point, there's things you can learn from at least having some type of risk to reward that just doesn't show up in a simulator.
Yeah.
And when I started, there was no real micro contracts, at least for the products I traded. And it is just wildly expensive. If you have $25,000, it's just not even enough to get started.
No, nothing. Yeah.
And so this kind of seeing people struggle with this transition of going live and thinking that, you know, we're in this golden age right now, to your point, that might change. All they have to do is introduce a little bit of regulation and maybe it won't go away, but maybe it will become much more expensive, or something will change about this. And I think the transition into learning this skill, getting into trading and not putting your own capital at that level at risk is just the way forward. And if you're not doing
that. Yeah, removing risk, man. That's always like, that's the first rule of business. Don't risk your own money if you don't have to.
Yeah.
And I'm so surprised that a lot of traders never even think about that.
Sure. Yeah. It's
staggering.
It was off my radar for, you know, a long time. Cause I think there's some flaws with the way that these companies are, they're like what this industry standard is. But you know, I think in the context of what it's used for, or what its purpose should be, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But I say all that to say this, I've wanted myself to just go through the process. So I started this Apex funding and I shorted at 1220, the initial balance high on the S&P to take it down to VWAP. And it was a beautiful short. I got into it and nothing happened. I couldn't get out. And I don't use hard stops. I'm very active in my trades, like hotkeys, finger on the button. So I had no stops in.
Yeah.
And the short, everything froze. The short went down. I actually took it with my live account as well, which was great. And then I was just locked out. I didn't know what happened.
Yeah.
So I tried reaching out to Apex and they have that like flatten deal.
Flatten everything. Yeah.
So I hit the flatten everything and it didn't flatten anything.
No, I had somebody else who was stuck in a trade and I said to them, go to the website and flatten everything. And it just said processing.
Yeah, like, it didn't do anything.
That's great. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know whether they're going to recoup the fees and stuff and whatever. I don't know.
I sent an email to them. I sent them screenshots, timestamps of everything. Of like, hey, listen, this is when I put the order in. This is when I hit the flatten. And then this is when I got liquidated because my position was still long.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to do anything right by me. I hope they do because I won't, you know, find somebody else to go through and I'll talk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got to say I'm with Elite Trader Funding as well. So they have TraderBait. I've been increasingly kind of trying to move away from Rhythmic because so many prop firms are going through Rhythmic. And I think what's happening is quite a lot of traffic jam because these messaging systems, because I do algorithmic trading as well. So the messaging systems that they're using, they can get overloaded. And, you know, at that point, there's nothing you can do. It's their fault, but, you know, it is what it is. So TraderBait doesn't really have those problems. Like I was actually trading on ETF on TraderBait and I was doing a trade in crude oil. But like I said, that one, I was able to take profits, but the other one, I couldn't get out. So luckily I had a hard stop. So, you know, it's not a problem. I've learned my lesson to use stops.
That's a very nice thing to learn actually, because it was, and I don't know if what this would happen if this was, you know, the live account, if you would lose your funding or not. But I mean, I was several days into this deal. I was up $600 on the day and up like $4,500 overall. And then it went down $5,000 on me, you know?
Yeah, it happens. It's the stuff that can happen even with live platforms. Like, for example, we had this one guy who he was doing really well, actually. He was pretty, he was making like $150,000 per trade. Easy. But then one day,
I'm sorry, did you say $150,000 per trade?
No, making $150,000. We were talking like prop trading company that had like multi millions. It was one of companies between like asset management and an actual prop firm. So it's like a mix of investor funds. You had to have qualifications to be in there and all that, whatever. But basically what was going on, I think it was one of like either NFP or one of the high risk releases. And he went in and it went his way at first, and then the Bloomberg terminal actually froze.
Wow.
It froze. He couldn't get out of the trade, and it went against him, and he ended up getting eventually hit for $2 million.
Oh.
It's like, you know, what do you do? And unfortunately, all of these platforms, they had this clause that if something goes wrong with the platform, they're not to blame, they will not recoup the funds. It's like, oh, great. Yeah, thanks. So there are pitfalls to, you know, to both sides of the story. When systems break down, they break down. And it's basically just down to the company to sort it out. So with ETF, I actually started on Ninja, which is on Rhythmic. And I had problems there. Like I would try to close the trade. It took me a month to sort things out with them. I would try and close the trade and it would remove the target and the stop and it would just kind of hang. So I'm like, so now I have an uncovered position and I can't close it. So what's going on? And for a while they were like investigating it and they were kind of back and forth. And in the end, they just admitted that Rhythmic was behaving weird. And they basically said, okay, we're sorry, here's another account, but can we please do it on TraderMate? So I was like, okay. And they admitted their fault. They adjusted the balance to what I had before the issues. So they actually were amazing. I was very skeptical how they're going to behave. And so far, Elite Trader Funding is like pretty high up on my list because of that, because of the way they approach the problem.
Yeah. Very interesting. Now, what's the deal with TraderMate? What are they using for data?
I think it's CQG on the back end.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And in your experience, I know you've been in the funding thing for a while, because I was actually wanting to ask somebody, because I've been doing it for several days and it shut down on me. And I was wondering,
it's not something that happens all the time. No, it happens once every few months, but you know, it's unfortunate that it happened to you within the first few days. It really is.
Okay. So I was thinking, I was like, is this a thing where it's like every couple of days they're shutting down on
me? No. I've been with Apex now for, I think 2-3 months. And this is the first time I've seen that.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I think there's some good things to learn about though. Always maybe on these prop deals, always use a hard stop.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what.
Yeah.
And
I know, you know, there are a lot of approaches, and I know that some traders don't like using hard stops because, like, for example, Rod Casilli, we actually collaborate quite a lot, him and me. He uses value at risk, and he likes to do campaigning around price. Mm. He trades extremely small. I mean, I trade comparatively quite small as well, but yeah, he trades really small. And that's what enables him to do that. So, you know, I don't know what happens when the platforms go crazy and how it affects him. But hopefully people who don't use hard stops like yourself, you can find some kind of a solution.
Yeah.
Because it's not good. It's always a risk.
What I'll do is like a catastrophe stop. Like I have a way to get out of trades in my live deal. If everything shut down, I could still get out of it really fast. But with this,
like
I was
a nuclear button.
Yeah, exactly. So if like it's far outside the scope of any risk you would want to take, but just have something in there.
Just to have something in there to not blow the entire account. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's a good idea.
I'll incorporate that moving forward to see what happens with it.
Yeah. So. Live and learn, eh?
Yeah, live and learn for sure. Interesting. Okay. Let me ask you a couple questions. We got a little bit of time.
I do, yeah.
I'm not doing anything else, as far as let's say routines, rituals, things like that go, what is something helpful off the screens that you do that helps you with your trading, either just overall performance or specifically like your trading focus or, you know, could you give us one?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm the time zone that I'm in, I actually have quite a lot of hours before I actually have to trade. So and I was never a morning person, I'll be honest, because I come from a session musician background. I used to go to bed at 5 a.m.
You got that rock star.
Yeah, well, it's not rock star. It's just that the clubs shut really late. And some of the clubs that I did, like, for example, for a while, I was a Ministry of Sound Live saxophonist. So, you know, that's like raving until 7 a.m. We don't rave. We're musicians. So we play, but you have to be there because you have sets that start at like 5 a.m., which is crazy. You have one at midnight and then another one at 3, another one at 5, and then you're done. That's your, you know, that's your day. So obviously that did suit me because I found that I was definitely not a morning person, and I'm still not a morning person, but because of the number of dogs that I have and all the stuff that I've got going on in my life, I do like to get up early. So when I do get up, I really, before I do any trading, I need to go to the gym. So I do weightlifting. You don't know that much about me, but I'm actually a bodybuilding champion for several federations as well. Since COVID, I haven't been as crazy. So this is actually big for me, like the way I am right now. I'm a bit soft and stuff. But yeah, so I like to keep myself in peak condition because I'm of the belief that if your body is functioning correctly and it's strong, your mind will function perfectly as well. So if you're not feeding your body, if you're not moving it, it's going to get your mind will get affected. Your decision making is going to be poor, and at the end of the day, emotions are very, very much connected with the biological processes in our body. So, for example, if you have an overload of glycogen, you've been drinking over the weekend, and now you're a bit hungover. You sit down, you trade, you lose the first trade. It gets you on a tilt, and that's the end of the story, right? We've all been there. But for me, I like to have a clear head when I come to sit down because first I have six platforms open, five or six platforms with various accounts, and I just cannot allow myself, and I do live streaming on Thursdays, so all of that, you need a lot of focus. You know how it is. When you're trading live, when you're doing analysis and stuff, you can't, you know, let everything just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to talk nonsense and stuff. You have to be on the ball. You have to be on the money, literally. So because of that, around midday, I go to the gym and I do weightlifting for about either 45 minutes or 90 minutes, depends on what I'm doing. And that puts me in the zone. It gets me completely calm. It gets rid of all the extra glycogen that is actually the fuel for fight or flight response. So if you get rid of it, obviously, you're not going to have as much problems with emotions and not being rational. And in fact, whenever somebody comes to me and they're struggling with emotionality and impulsivity during trading, the first thing that we do is we get them off the trading desk and we get them to do some weightlifting, you know, do a few reps, have some free weights around. And as you're doing the compound movements and stuff, you will notice your rational brain coming back. It's not going to be instantaneous. It's like it's a process. It's a biological process that has to take place. But in all cases, they all suddenly come out of the anger issues or frustration or fear. And suddenly they go, oh, my God, that was a stupid trade. What was I thinking? It's like in the space of half an hour, their mindset completely changes. So that's something that I do. And I practice 5 days a week. So I go to the gym 5 days a week. And it's something that's really helped me because I was an overtrader. I was a bit crazy. Because, you know, they say women traders, you know, oh, you're like risk averse. I'm not risk averse at all. Like, I'm actually quite aggressive when it comes to certain things. So because of that, I had to rein that in.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. And the idea of something in your routine, stressing your body, and the body-mind connection is just so strong. And I often think this, and I've ended up setting a timer just so it kind of breaks my focus a little bit so I don't get sucked into just getting honed in for hours at a time sometimes.
Yeah, tunnel vision, yeah.
Yeah, but if anything's going wrong, just to stand up and like change what your body is doing it changes your thought pattern.
It does.
It's very powerful to do, but a designated time before that to get your body right, get your mind right before you start. At the end of the day, what we do here is so heavily based on performance. It's unbelievable. And so we could all take a good lesson from that. Very cool. We'll wrap it up right there. We are out of time. This has gone very fast, but I've very much enjoyed our conversation. I hope that we can have you on again sometime. We can dive into some other stuff. So on the way out, I'll give you just a moment. Is there anything you'd like it to push people to? If anybody's here that just kind of digs what you're saying, wants to know more about you or what you offer?
Sure. So if you are struggling with anything trading related, if you want to know more about the futures markets, just go to my YouTube channel, Market Stalkers. You're going to find a lot of helpful videos that are all free. You know, you don't have to pay for anything. It's just all out there. I'm not somebody who posts very often. I probably do a new video every 10 days. I do live streams on Thursdays. Usually one is completely public with either just me or Roderick Caselli or another trader of mine called Ray Trundy. So we kind of have this like little community to try and help people and bring value to the community. As you know, futures trading and futures traders, that we're not very very popular yet. So we're kind of trying to raise awareness that futures are better. You shouldn't be doing crypto. You shouldn't be doing Forex. You shouldn't be doing nonsense and things like that. So if you want to learn about all of that, just go to my channel. You will be met with a crappy green screen, but we're working on that.
But not for much longer. So just
not for much longer. Yeah, we're working on that.
And she's aware. Don't leave anything in the
pocket. I know. I make jokes. Yeah, don't worry. Yes, come at me.
Very good. Well, listen, I'll say goodbye to everybody and then I'll pause the recording and say goodbye to you separately. Yep. But for everybody watching, a big hello. We'll catch you guys on the next one. You can go check out Market Stalker. Thanks for tuning in and I'll see you guys on the next episode. Goodbye. Hey, thanks for watching to the very end. If you enjoyed this episode, there's a good chance you're going to love the other ones. So spend some time on the channel and make sure you show some love on the way out. Now, if you're struggling with your trading and you'd like my help, everything I'm involved with will be linked in the descriptions. Happy trading.